This is Omo.
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 Is this Yoko Omo?
This is Omo.
This is Omo.
Welcome to Omo. My name is Elizabeth Perry, and I'm going to be your host today. And joining me here is Catherine Kidwell.
Hello, hello. Glad to be back. Happy to do this episode with you. This is our first one together, so this will be fun.
This is really exciting. So we actually have a very special guest today, Kristen Siegfried Ballinger.
Kristen is a Boston-based violin maker and restorer at Rooning & Son Violins. She's a graduate and former instructor at the Chicago School of Violin Making and holds a degree from Illinois Wesleyan University. While still in school at CSVM, she began working for Peter Semmons at Semmons Violin, where she continued after graduation. In 2019, she began as instructor at the Chicago School of Violin Making with executive director Antoine Nevelek. She has recently moved to Boston and is focused on new making along with her work at Rooning & Sons Violins. You had reached out to Chrissy.
Yeah.
You guys were chatting about it. She sounded really excited about the topic. So what are we going to be discussing with her today?
So Catherine, we are going to be discussing creativity, what creativity means and unlocking creativity within ourselves. I don't know if you've ever gotten to a point where you felt kind of like in a creative bog. Were you just stuck?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's not just me. It's nice to hear that. Yeah, where you just don't feel inspired, which sometimes feels ironic, right? Because everybody thinks, oh my goodness, violin making, your life must be just like a fairy tale.
It is very romanticized.
Yeah. And then I think, well, you know, I don't know of anyone who actually likes cleaning dead skin off of instruments.
No, that's a small number there. But you do have to get creative with it, especially when it comes to certain cleaning products. And so, you know, creativity really does apply very heavily to our field in a lot that we do when it comes to
many different facets.
To new making and the different ways that we make our instruments and how each person, each culture has individual characteristics that go along with it. But even when it comes to repair and restoration, the chemicals we use, the methods we use, how we clamp, all of it is a creative venture.
Oh, absolutely. 1,000%. Exactly. Everything in our approach to making, in our approach to restoration, everything really having a creative approach and a creative mind makes a massive difference. So I'm really looking forward to talking with Chrissy. And we're going to hear from her in just a minute, right after this message from our sponsors.
Hello, Homo sapiens. Rosie Deloach-Zimmerman here. And our guest for this episode, Kristen Siegfried Ballinger, will be joining Learning Trade Secrets for Basic Violin Setup May 5th through 10th. So book your workshop now and level up your skill set. Siegfried Ballinger is a renowned instructor, having taught for several years at the Chicago School of Violin Making, and now working for one of the top shops in the country, Rooning & Sons Violins. So, you can expect your education to be of the highest caliber. Check out this workshop and others at learningtradesecrets.com.
This episode of OMO is sponsored in part by House of Note, who wished the Violin Society of America a happy 50th anniversary. And a thank you to all of those who have invested in this organization for all these years. House of Note, located in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, has been serving the Minnesota community since the birth of the VSA, specializing in sales, rentals, and repair and restoration. Get everything you need for every level of musician at houseofnote.com.
Welcome to our wonderful guest, Kristen Siegfried Ballinger.
Hello.
Chrissy, you and I were chatting on the phone the other day. And you brought up something that you had been thinking about a lot recently, and it kind of inspired this whole episode.
We had initially talked about education and learning and different backgrounds, and I'm on this kick of fostering creativity and how that is incorporated into what we do. You know, some people think of mm-hmm. this as a craft. Some people think of it as woodworking. Some people think of it as more of an art form. And I think regardless of what you end up defining it as, it is still a creative endeavor and something that we all end up growing throughout our careers. It's about developing yourself and your skill set.
So many times, right, and I'm sure you guys get this too, you know, you end up, someone says, oh, what do you do for work? And I don't know, sometimes I kind of flinch and I'm like, okay, mentally preparing myself. And I said, well, I'm a violin maker. And they go, oh. And then the next thing, it's almost guaranteed, they go, you must be so creative. Mm-hmm. I always thought of being creative as being talented with the visual arts. And so I'd always kind of back off and be like, oh, no. I'm not that creative. I'm just really good at reading a ruler. I'm really good at following directions. I'm really good at like scraping tiny, tiny, tiny amounts of chalk off of a patch. Like I'm your girl for that. But don't ask me to decorate your house, please. Or a cake.
But I think that creativity comes in so many forms. Other people will come up with different definitions of creativity. I think it is developing your own skill set and continually pushing your own skills, whatever that is. Because, you know, people can say that musicians are so creative. Dancers are creative. There's so many different forms of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But right. For me, what it comes down to is not settling for your set of skills, continually developing yourself and saying, okay, yes, I made this painting or I made this violin, but how can I do it better? Asking questions about that.
As we were thinking about this episode, going into it, I was thinking about quite a bit, and I would like to say I'm a creative person, but I really feel like I'm just learning what other people do sometimes and then just doing those things. And maybe I'm adding on to it and I don't realize it, but something I'm realizing as well as we discuss this is creativity and originality aren't the same thing. And in my brain, I'm putting them as the same thing.
Yes. Yes. And because it's not like mm-hmm. completely original, you couldn't possibly, you know, you can't take credit for it being creative.
Creativity is more of a mindset rather mm-hmm. than, you know, always coming up with new and original ideas. We had talked about, you know, where does creativity show up in the violin making field? For me as a new maker, that comes up with, okay, how am I gonna do these corners differently? Oh, I really liked how Daljesu handles this purfling here. Or I really love the proportions of this Strad Scroll. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be recreating exactly a Strad Scroll.
Yeah, no matter how hard I try, it never seems to happen.
Yep. However, I can still take inspiration from that. I can still find the things I like in other people's work. And for me, taking that and incorporating that into my work, but using that to create my own instrument, you know, it will always be mine. I will, you know, I will never, ever make a perfect Strad bench copy or a Daljesu bench copy. It's never going to be perfect. I have long accepted that. But I think it's fair to say that I can still take those ideas and make my own instrument and push my own work to be the best that it can be.
You know, I had a moment, I'm realizing how many years ago this was now, feeling old. But I had this moment where I realized that I was feeling stuck. You know, I felt trapped by player expectations of a violin, because there are a lot of very, you know, sort of clear-cut expectations of new instruments, but violins, I think, especially. And I just felt trapped. And I didn't feel inspired and I didn't want to make anything and it just didn't seem all that fun. And I started fiddling around with this idea of making a smaller instrument, sort of a pochette of a kind. But I didn't want to make like an actual real pochette. And I just thought, you know what? I have nobody to please but myself. And I started just making this weirdest looking instrument. One of my coworkers kept telling me it looked like a dead chicken. Like that the body proportion was almost exactly like you know, like a chicken with its legs all tucked in and everything, which is really, really flattering. Thanks.
Oh, no, that's so kind.
So kind. The best part was actually I'd finished the rib structure and I was feeling really proud. I kind of based it a little bit off of like a gamba and a little bit off of this, but mostly I actually just kind of freehanded it. I used a cereal box for the template.
I love all of this. I love it.
I know. And I just was like, I can just do whatever I want. I don't have to answer to anybody. It doesn't have to be perfect. I'm just going to do this because this is something that I want and I'm doing it for me. So therefore I just, you know, and I just kind of let myself like let some certain like things go a little bit. Like the expectations.
Everyone else's expectations of exactly. What things should be.
And Jerry Lynn came to visit and I was like, look, I'm making an instrument. I haven't made anything in so long because I've just felt so stuck. And he looked at me and he said, have you seen that Facebook group, Unmarketable Instruments?
Oh, my God.
So good.
I know. Oh, love you, Jerry. Yep. But it made me laugh.
I think that was at least my first dozen instruments was Unmarketable Instruments. Yeah, that's another thing is, well, two things in there. One, making things for fun. You know, I think that is part of the creative process. Doing things because they're fun and because you like to do them. Okay, so what did you get out of that?
The biggest thing that I got out of it was just this like feeling inspired and reinvigorated. And like, you know, partway through it, I paused on making it because I got so excited about making another
viola. That's the other thing is like, you need to get beyond, you know, you need to get into other things. I think creativity is kind of like a muscle. Like it can be developed. It can be, you know, you can foster the creative mindset. And there are so many books about, you know, how to maximize your workflow. And one of my favorites that I've got here is how daily rituals, how artists work. I was flipping through this before that and going through all of the different ways that various artists and composers have worked over the years, because it can be developed. It can be grown. You can't just wait for inspiration to spark.
Right. And just working forward and like pushing through. But also, you know, if you are having some kind of a block, I think sometimes moving diagonally, you know, you don't have to always continue, you know, on the project that might be the one that maybe financially makes sense. Because sometimes there's a reason that like your brain is still processing things. Maybe there's just more that you need to think about and you can't move forward until you've like something's unlocked in your head. And so move diagonally, maybe work on something completely different. Go sew t-shirts.
Yeah. But you said you were making this instrument and then you got inspired about another viola to working on. It's like, how many times have you been working on something else, doing the dishes, folding laundry? And, you know, it is so boring and so mundane that you let your mind wander. And that's where the fun ideas come. Or the stupid ideas.
But, that too.
You know, sometimes you need boredom. Sometimes you need a side adventure to do this. And I've heard so many people say, let yourself get bored. And, you know, that's where I think routines personally help me. Doing boring tasks, walking, running. Man, if there's anything I can do to get my mind off of a run, I will do that. I will think about so many other things than trying to run.
I hate running.
Yeah, so do I. I think about lots of other things. But you need that time away from what you're focused on. And, you know, if you're stuck on a project, I can tell you at least 50 ways how to remain stuck on that. You know, that was always my favorite teaching tool was, well, let me tell you all of the ways not to do this because I have screwed it up and it doesn't work that way.
One of the hardest things I think for me was when I transitioned like over from working at a shop to working from home. And I was trying to, like, you know, do more restoration work at home because that's kind of what I like to do as the bulk of my work. And I like to do violin making as like my side hobby when the mood strikes, you know, when I really want to work on something that's like actually flat and square in the right ways and like just isn't like falling apart into pieces.
But, things that you broke yourself.
Yeah, things that I broke all by myself, actually, or my toddler broke them for me.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He pulled out the top of that viola that I was working on. He goes, "Look, Mom." And he like snaps off a corner and I was like, "I love you." And we're putting that back now.
I was going to say, did the dead chicken get finished? Does the dead chicken live?
Oh, the dead chicken has a body. It just doesn't have a neck and a head yet.
Finish that chicken.
Oh, it's real dead then, ain't it?
It's headless. Headless pochette. Someday. I did crazy, crazy purfling on it because I'd always wanted to try some kind of nutty purfling job. And after that, I was like, wow, I'm so glad I did this. And I'm glad that I got it out of my system forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely a way to get unstuck from projects.
But anyway, as I was saying, like when I transitioned to working from home, one of the things that was really hard for me was at work. I felt like when I kind of got in my head and got stuck and didn't, you know, I had to think about a repair or I had to think about how I wanted to approach even carving a bridge for a certain instrument because I tried to hone in on what the instrument needs. And so I'd have to think about it a bit. When I was at work, I could be like, oh, you know what? I need to like let this sort of percolate through my brain. Why don't I go check the stock of all of our strings? And I would go through and, you know, and I'd have like a bazillion different mundane tasks I could do at work that felt like work and that sort of fed back into the same thing. And then when I was working from home, it was like, oh, I need to let this sit and think and, oh, there's more laundry.
That's a rabbit hole.
I have to go make a grocery list. Oh, what happened to the pantry? Oh, that was me. Mm-hmm. All the mess here is me.
And I mean, you know what? I also struggled when I started working from home, even right after school, because I'd been in the school mindset. I'd be like, this is my routine. That I go to school, I go to work, I come home. And, you know, and then it was all of a sudden, you have all this free time. I didn't have all the free time, but I, you know, far more than I do now. And it was like, oh, I have this free time. I can do other things. I don't want to make. But part of it was getting myself into my own new routines and developing those habits to actually make me sit down at the bench. And to be honest, just going to sit down in front of the bench does wonders for me sometimes. Like, just get your butt in the seat and your hands will know what to do from there. I know that as soon as I, you know, now I've got my little shop here. This is shop number 3 or 4 for me in my house. And I know as soon as I walk in this door, if I pick up a tool, I'm going to be here for at least 45 minutes. And, you know, that's mm-hmm. one of the routines that gets me moving, that gets me unstuck, because I often fall into the, oh, I have to walk by the washing machine to get to my shop. And I have to tell myself, just go in, just go do it. Because if I get stuck into other stuff, violins aren't going to get made. And violins mm-hmm. are a lot more fun than laundry. So,
yeah.
I have something very similar. Because my workshop used to be in a breakfast nook in the kitchen area of our house. And so it's all open. There's no closed doors. And I realized the only way that I could start focusing and getting working and start thinking about the stuff I was working on was I had to put my apron on. And once the apron was on,
do you need that trigger?
Then I could follow through.
And you're in that mode. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if I started working and it just... I was in a funk and I couldn't figure out why my brain wasn't focusing, why I couldn't think of the things I was working on, I'd realize, oh shoot, the apron's not on. I don't have the apron on. Where's the apron? And put it on. And things would go smoothly after that.
Yeah, I had to do apron and shoes.
Oh, the shoes are important.
Yeah.
Shop rules. Gotta have
For some
shoes
reason.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta keep the toes attached, ideally.
Yeah, I did learn actually when I was in school that you should not wear sandals when you're bandsawing aluminum.
Oh, no.
Pro tip.
It was
not
fine.
To do.
It was fine. But, like, I just had, like, glitter all over my feet for, like, you know, it was, like, aluminum glitter. It was awesome.
But you need those activation points to get moving, to get unstuck. And that can be different things for everyone.
As far as like creativity, it's interesting. Some people crave unstructure, right? They crave just sort of this like nebulous, blank sheet of paper and for someone to say, create. And that's never worked well for me, like ever. You know, I'm a very happy box thinker. I like my box. I'm happy to like live in the box and I will find all sorts of corners in that box that other people haven't found. But I like the box. It's a good box, you know.
You know, and that's why everyone has their own routine. Some people, you know, you give them a canvas, they like to sketch everything out, plan all their colors, go from there. Some people just will go nuts. Some people like to have a shop with 5 different projects and bounce in between them.
Yeah.
If that works for you, great. But if that becomes a habit and you get used to working like that, there you go. That's still a routine.
And it becomes your routine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to know, like, what inspires you. So, What do you feel like really inspires you?
Oh, well, seeing instruments, that does it for me. No, I'm very lucky to...
Like nice ones or just any instruments?
All of them. I will be completely honest about that. All of them. Nice ones. I'm very lucky in that where I'm working now, I get to see a lot of nice instruments. Even when I was teaching at the school, we had people drop by with instruments and it was fun to show those to the students because it's like, these are really, really beautiful. You know, it may be 5, 10, 30 years before you're making these things. I may never make something this beautiful, but it's still amazing to see and to look. And I think I could find something that I like on pretty much any instrument. And, you know, I take a lot of inspiration from my previous instruments, too, and say, well, I won't do that again. So learning from my own mistakes. But, you know, seeing as many instruments as I can, it's been, you know, we had VSA in Baltimore last November, and that was a big dose of very beautiful instruments, both new and older instruments. And it was just fun. You know, that kind of stuff just, it fills you up for the year. And I know restoration people feel like that. You know, you go to Oberlin for a week. You know, we were both there last year. And I remember the first year that I went to Oberlin, and that was just a mind-boggling experience for me. There was so much information. And I think I drove home in a daze, just like all of this information starting to seep in. And I was still processing that 9 months, a year later.
Yeah, it almost feels like your brain is like the center of an atom and all these ideas are like the electrons spinning around.
Mm-hmm. You still think about that with restoration things. That's where I think creativity comes into play with restoration. No job is exactly the same. You never
absolutely
do anything the same way twice, which is so much fun.
It doesn't matter how many saddle cracks you've glued. Every single one is going to be different. That's actually what I find so satisfying about doing restoration work is it can't be rote, which I get that making really can't be either because every piece of wood is a little bit different. But I do feel like it's a little bit easier to get into a pattern and just kind of go with making. With restoration, it just seems like you have to like sit and think a lot more.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine, you were saying that that you're still learning all of these new things, but what about the second time or the third time? You know, you have that cumulative experience in your head and you can say, oh, okay, well, this worked last time. What do I need to do differently to make this one work? You know, you're building your skill set, and it's that bag of tricks that you just keep adding to.
I don't know if either one of you have had this experience too with restoration work, because that's my primary focus. Is I'll be working on a project and maybe I don't have the answer of like, I'm just not sure what the best way about going about this is. And I'll think about it. I'll set it aside. And I'll keep thinking about it. I'll go to sleep that night. Mm-hmm. And of course, what's happening is I'm dreaming about the project. And it's happened more than once now. I figured out the answer in the dream and I woke up like, I have the answer. I know what to do. And I'm like booking it like either like to my job or in my own shop of just like, I have the answer now. I don't know if dream logic's going to work, but it seems solid. And it's worked out so far. And so stepping back and just kind of thinking and letting the brain relax and enjoy
and let those little hamster wheels turn
actually has been quite nice.
Your brain. Yeah. You just need to to step away, do other things, build your chicken violin, fold some laundry, and there you go.
I feel like people are going to ask me for a picture of this now, and it's going
to... Oh, I definitely want to see. I want to see the chicken violin.
I'm going to need that for the socials, please.
Just imagine, like, a tiny little gamba with no neck.
It really sounds very cute, though.
It's very cute. It's like this. The body's like the size of a half size.
I definitely want to see
this. It's supposed to fit in like a personal item.
Yes, please.
So I have one more question for you. So when I was in school, this was a question that we would ask each other sort of out of curiosity. If you got to choose a job in a German factory building violins, what job would you choose?
Bass bars.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't expecting that one.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. What about you, Catherine? What would you pick?
First thing that came to mind was scrolls.
What? Oh, my goodness. Oh,
I really like them. They're fun.
Yeah. They're fun.
Everyone thinks I'm insane because I would pick. Do? Oh, perfectly.
Oh, no way. Not a chance.
Oh, every day.
Nope.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
You talked about having a dream about violin. The most vivid violin making dream I've had was purfling a cello.
Really?
It was like it was a long dream because the cello is big.
They are.
I was like gouging out the purfling channel in my dream, just like really zen.
Have you done a cello?
And I was just like, yeah. And I woke up and I was like, what am I doing today? Oh, I'm purfling a cello. Like, I get to do more. I was so excited. I know something might be wrong with me.
No, it sounds lovely, to be honest. Was it normal purfling that you were doing in the dream? Was it something funky? Was it just like happy?
That one was just normal. That was
that
normal.
That wasn't double fantastic. Purfling with pearl inlays in between.
No, fortunately not. No,
make a circle and a smiley face in it.
The one I did on my quote unquote pochette, the corners ended up with 5 separate joints in each corner, and I just wanted to die by the end of the 8th corner. It's like, who came up with this idea? This was terrible. This was a really dumb idea, especially when I realized that the curve of the stupid little doodad whoop-de-whoop that I put in the corner did not actually match the curve on my bending iron, because I had not thought that through. It was tighter than the curve on my bending iron. So that was so awesome because I'd already cut the channel. So plan in advance for like templates.
So what creative way did you end up bending that?
Oh.
What solution did you have to push yourself to come up with?
I do a lot of rib structure and lining and purfling bending just with my hands. I actually really don't like using a bending strap, which it's kind of a miracle that I don't have like a bazillion third degree burns on my fingers.
Oh, for real?
Or no, first degree burns? Yeah, I got it backwards. Anyway, because I tend to just bend things barehanded.
Bare paws, just get it in there.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have like tiny little hands. I don't know about bare paws. Maybe little raccoon hands.
All of our fingers are so calloused at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's just kind of what works for me, especially with purfling. And so I was, rubbing it along the heat, getting it really, really hot and, you know, on the tightest corner I could. And then I'd pull it off and hold it tighter and just like use my hands to cool it down that way. So it cooled down in a tighter shape, which led to, you know, breakage.
Well, that looks real Dulgesu then. Some nice broken purfling.
Cut eight corners and I was like, next time I'm going to think this through a little more. You know, I had a friend who told me that she was like, wow, you kind of, you know, some people like to look before they leap. You just leap and then you go, oh, while you're on the way down. Oh, yeah, that might have been.
Let's figure it out.
But you know what? Forces you to be creative. Forces you to be creative.
Yep,
if you just
necessity.
Jump off that cliff.
The mother of invention.
You really have to start thinking on your way down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where did that go? Right. Well, maybe I should figure something out.
Somewhere.
No skydiving without parachutes,
please. A disclaimer from the OMO team. Absolutely.
There are so many former students who are going to hate hearing me say that.
Oh,
nothing
really?
Teach better. Oh. Nothing teaches better than some mistakes.
So many learning opportunities.
Yeah. Man. Absolutely.
When I was looking to enroll in violin making school, I remember the coursework was laid out on the website, and it said that there was no formal repair instruction at the school because it was expected that students will learn certain repairs over the course of their education while working on their own instruments. And I read that and then I reread that and I kind of laughed and I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. And then I actually had to experience it myself and it was less funny. When I, you know, on my first violin, when I thinned the neck too much and the teacher was like, well, now you get to learn how to do a neck graft. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then he almost made me do another one. On the same instrument.
That's a rough one.
Yeah. I didn't have to.
Okay.
The neck was fine. It was good. It was close, but it was fine.
And sometimes you just need to accept that the first couple times you do things, it's not going to be great. And that's okay, because it will get better.
I just keep thinking of all the things that I screw up all the time. Actually, there was a maker that I met. He was really prolific. And I asked him, at what point did you make a violin and look at it and not be annoyed or embarrassed by something on it? And he thought about it for a second. He said, you know, I think it was around 300. He said, I think it was around then that I looked at it and I went, I'm okay with that. It wasn't even that he was like super happy about it. He was like, okay with that. So yeah, that actually, you know, made me feel a lot better.
Yeah, it takes a lot of bad stuff to get the work done and to get all of those mistakes worked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of these artists that I was reading about, they was like, I write 2,000 words a day and throw out 1,500 of them, sometimes all of them, sometimes they're not great, and you just have to keep putting them out and you just have to keep working and creating things and doing repairs different ways,
yeah,
to get to the good stuff. You will learn a little bit with each thing. Those experiences are so valuable. You know, you think about those mistakes and those neck grafts and they're powerful for you. Those are incredible learning opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you've had. So, not fun ones.
I would not trade those for anything.
But that's what helps us grow, and that's what helps us keep making new things, keeping better things, making new mistakes.
What this does make me think about is working on a project or making an instrument. Maybe it didn't turn out exactly how you wanted it to.
Yeah.
But moving on and continuing on with the next one and continuing with that, like, good enough is achievable, you know? But perfection is very, very hard and can be quite limiting to get to if you're just going to stay where you are to try to get to it. Experience is nice. Getting creative with the process is helpful. Moving on and trying again is a good way to go about that, I think.
Well, to wrap this up, Chrissy, it was just so absolutely wonderful.
This has been a lovely discussion about creativity and the work that we're doing.
Yeah. And it's just so especially pertinent because, you know, this really is, it's a very creative endeavor with every part of violin making and restoration and every part of the violin. Really, you do have to be very creative in your approach to it because no two violins are ever the same.
This is the coda.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to OMO. I'm here with Catherine. So, Catherine, what did you think of Chrissy?
No, that was great. I've gotten to chat with her a little bit at Overland and at the VSA conference, but it's been really good to hear more about how she approaches creativity and the things in our field with its connection to it.
So you said that before we started this episode, when you were preparing for it, you actually looked up the definition for creativity.
I did.
What was that?
So the Oxford definition for it is relating to or involving the imagination or original ideas, especially in the production of an artistic work. So my whole thing earlier about not being sure if combining all these things I'm learning from other people really counts as creative, but it is the combination of them and the imagination of putting them together. It doesn't have to be solely an original idea for it to be creative. It really is just what you're doing with the knowledge that you have.
You know, actually, so my sister-in-law is an artist, and I started trying to design a logo for myself. And I had this vision of what I thought I wanted, but it just, like, nothing was quite looking right. So I kept sending her my ideas and pictures. And one of the pieces of advice that she gave me, you know, I said, well, I think I stumbled on something that I really like. She said, okay, now draw it 8 more times and change one thing every time. And I was like, do I have to? You know, I thought, you know, when you're done with school, your homework is, you don't get homework anymore, but apparently you still do.
Oh, I wish that was true.
I know, right? It actually made a huge difference just doing the same thing over and over again, but intentionally changing something every time, whether it was using another color or adding lines in a different place or whatever. And they were not huge changes, but what ended up happening was that the end result actually was different from what I had thought was perfect. And I ended up coming up with something that I liked so much more. And each one of those iterations was an example of being creative. You know, being creative is not that end result. It's each tiny little shift. It's each step in the process. That's where the creative thinking is really crucial, instead of thinking that it's this end result that just magically appears. So that was really helpful to me to sort of change the way that I was thinking about creativity and whether or not I was a creative person. Chrissy was just an absolute dream to have here on OMO, and we're so grateful that she was willing to spend her evening with us. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We look forward to the next episode, our wonderful guests, and everyone, you know, stay safe and create.
OMO is an all-Luthier podcast produced by Rosie Deloach Zimmerman, Brandon Godman, Jason Peoples, Elizabeth Perry, Catherine Kidwell, and Jerry Lynn. This episode was edited by Josh Litton. Music by Invoke Sound. If you like the show, you can help us out by leaving an iTunes review or by becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/omopod, where you can get your very own Omo swag. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out at mail@omopod.com or call the Omo phone at 240-686-5345. Thanks for listening.